Welcome back, Wisconsin and beyond. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's special DNC coverage coming to you live from downtown Chicago at the United Center. And I'm really kind of fangirl, stupid excited to be joined right now by Congressman from Michigan, Dan Kildee. Thank you so much for being here, Dan.
Thank you.
You represent the 8th CD.
Yep.
Which includes Flint, Michigan.
My hometown.
Yes. You were born and raised in Flint.
Yep.
You ran for basically a school board when you were 18.
18 years old. That was more than 10 years ago.
More than 10.
47 years ago, I was elected to my board of education.
So you have been doing this for a long time. You served on a board of commissioners for a county, correct?
Right.
And we were just sharing before you popped up, we got on air, Dan, that I myself have worked in local government, worked for a congressman back in the day, worked on the Hill. So it's a real personal pleasure to have you.
It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks so much for making time. Let's just jump right into it. Flint has had an incredible challenge providing its citizens and residents with clean water. Milwaukee, different cause, but same tragic result. We
right.
still struggle with lead waters and ensuring that every single child and every single family in the city of Milwaukee has clean water every day that they can rely on. What's it been like coming? You were elected in 23. You've been serving, trying to address this issue. Now, granted, there were decisions made a long time ago that you weren't responsible
right, for sure.
But that doesn't matter. You get elected and people look to you for solutions.
Absolutely. When you're in these offices, people don't want to hear reasons that you can't help or reasons that it wasn't your fault. They want to know that you've got their back. You know, so I was elected 12 years ago. Immediately, within a couple of years, the Flint water crisis came up. And it was at that moment, it was sort of a clarifying moment in a lot of ways. Because you never really have any doubt that you can do good in these jobs. But there's this moment that occurs when you realize, I know exactly why I'm here.
Mm.
I have to get help from my community because I look around and there's nobody else that represents this district in Congress. There's nobody that represents Flint except me.
Yeah.
And it's on me. Now, the reason I was able to succeed is that I was able to persuade colleagues on both sides of the aisle that we needed to get this done. I had some great allies. One of them was Gwen Moore.
Yeah.
Gwen, with whom I continue to serve, she sits right next to me on the Ways and Means Committee. And we've talked about water issues. We've talked about the similarities between my home community. Milwaukee's a much larger place, but let's face it. A lot of these older industrial cities face these challenges.
These same exact challenges.
Yeah, for sure.
And thanks for correcting me. You were reelected in 23.
Yes.
You've been a congressperson for
12 years.
A dozen blissful years. Yes.
12 long years.
Long years. but this fundamental idea that when people are in need, especially when it's such an imminent threat to public health, safety, and welfare, you've got to be able to have difficult conversations and make compromise and forge collaborative relationships with people from the other party.
For sure.
This used to be sort of the presumption of elected officials. Voters expected that.
Yep.
It seems like it's gotten harder and harder to do. I largely attribute it to gerrymandering, which, you know, sort of disincentivizes compromise and collaboration. So you worked across the aisle. What made it possible, even in these fractured political times, to do that, Dan?
Well, you know, it's interesting you ask the question because I wonder now if the Flint water crisis would have occurred in 2024 as opposed to 2015.
Yes.
Whether we would have been able to navigate the current political environment because as hard as it was then, and it was hard, it's gotten worse in many ways.
Yes.
And because I think there are more members of Congress who take this sort of performative approach and really are not fixed on actually making progress and solving a problem. But with the exception of my earlier joke off air about loving the sound of my own voice,
yes.
There are members of Congress whose entire purpose for service is to hear the beautiful music of the sound of their own voice and not really be that concerned with actually delivering something.
They're Ovid's narcissists, no doubt.
Yeah.
It's funny that you even use the word performative, Congressman, because I talk about performative politics all the time. I have two interrelated definitions. I'm not talking about the drama of politics. Politics is dramatic.
It is.
It is theatrical. We're at a large production,
right,
of the biggest theatrical production that a political party can put on. I'm not talking about that element of it. I'm talking about performativeness, where an action or a refusal to act is undertaken purely for the raw exercise of power because you can and your score settling and it doesn't matter the merits of the thing. That's one of my two definitions. We've seen a lot of that.
Right.
The other definition is you're doing it simply to raise your personal brand exposure, what have you, to see your face in the media, to hear your voice, as you put it. That is what I call performative politics.
Right.
And when those two things intersect, every single American and every single person I've ever talked to goes, that's gross, and this is what I hate about politics.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. There's one element that connects to what you're saying,
mm-hmm,
and it's this this notion that members... in my case, it's members of Congress, but it's people in this space.
Yep.
That they can justify the lack of progress by celebrating their righteousness.
Yes.
And this sort of obsession with righteousness, which when you think about it, they congratulate themselves about how right they are, having done nothing to advance the interests of the people that they profess to love so much. And so what does that mean? It means the true successful public servant has a sense of what is right, but also understands that none of that means anything to somebody in Milwaukee struggling to make ends meet unless I do something that actually improves their circumstance. They don't get any benefit from me being their best advocate if my advocacy does not put...
Yields nothing.
Absolutely nothing. And so what does that mean? That means we have to make the sacrifice of compromise in order to do the things that we know are important for the people that we work for, even if that means having to have a hard conversation with those very same people and say, I did everything I could to move us as far as I could, and I'll keep trying, but I can't give you everything that you need or want or should have right now because that's just not in the cards. There are too many people who are unwilling to have that difficult conversation. My favorite professor...
I just want to interrupt you. Thank you for that, Dan. That is it. That it has to be more important. That the results have to matter more than the rhetoric.
For sure.
That service to others and getting things done for others has to come before self-congratulation.
Yeah.
Right. I couldn't, thank you so much. I talk about this all the time.
Well, I'm glad you do. I'm glad you do. And keep doing it.
Yes.
Because
we
need more people who think about it that way. I came to understand that through experience and through a really good teacher who taught me this really one phrase that I'll let you have. Leadership is the act of disappointing your own supporters at a rate they can absorb. You've got to tell people the hard things. You got to tell people things they don't want to hear. Not because it's fun, because it's true. And then you have the space to actually try to make some progress, to actually do something that even if they're not going to clap when you walk down the street, you have to take the satisfaction that you did something that was important for them. You have to know that.
Mm.
Popularity in politics is not the same as success in political leadership.
In governing.
Yeah.
Right? You know, what is it? Campaigning is poetry and governing is prose.
Yeah, that's true.
It's so dry. I have a small story to share with you on this very point. I once promised a mayor, I was making a proposal, and I said, listen, if this goes badly, I'll resign or you can fire me publicly. If it goes well, you can take absolutely all the credit, take
right,
a huge victory lap.
Right.
And I saw him relax because I knew, I was challenged that that's what it took, right? I wished he just did it on the merits of the thing. But I often say, because I worked in a capacity where I was serving and advising elected officials, I'd say to my staff, hey, listen, understand sometimes what the motivations are. And maybe I don't even need to put it in such transactional terms. The pressures that elected officials face. Yeah. But this, my new friend, Congressman Dan Kildee, leadership is the act of disappointing your own supporters at a rate they can't absorb.
I didn't invent the concept, but I have put it in practice.
Let's give a shout out. What was the professor's name?
Professor Marty Linsky at the Kennedy School of Government at Harvard University. Fantastic guy.
Listen, Professor Marty, you got any more knowledge bombs to drop on us? My name is Maggie Dawn. Just call us up. We're on the Civic Media Radio Network. You are also, I noticed, I just thought I could touch on this a bit with you. You're truly a product of Michigan education.
Yeah.
And this was another point of commonality. I went to a small Catholic grade school. I then went to a big urban magnet high school. I went to Marquette University on an academic scholarship, and then I went to the University of Wisconsin for law school. How important is public education and making sure that we're reaching each and every child in our communities?
It's the great equalizer. Yes. I mean, if we actually acted upon our beliefs, I've heard every politician in the history of politics say that our children are our most precious commodity resource, whatever you want to call it, and that education is paramount. Words.
Yep.
Just a bunch of words. Unless, and we shouldn't be wedded to any particular model, but the product has to be that we're going to give every child every tool to be the best version of themselves possible. And the notion that we continue to go on the cheap on that question is not only morally questionable, but it's economically ridiculous.
Yes.
The trajectory of a life
it's
of
cutting
a
cutting off our nose to spite our face as a society.
And this kind of even goes to the way we measure the cost and benefit of things. You know, the whole cost-benefit analysis that Congress enters into is to look at the cost of something and the return on that expenditure over 10 years. We call it the 10-year window. It's something that the Congressional Budget Office uses. And what I've been proposing is, I don't mind using a 10-year window. Let's just use the right 10 years. That if we invest in
trailing 10 years, like, how are we doing this?
Preschool, we ought to measure the effect of preschool, not starting at age 4, but at age 24.
Yes.
If you invest in that child, give them a better launch pad, the distance they will travel by the time they're 24 years old is significantly greater. Yes. So I don't mind using metrics. Let's just use the right metrics.
Good metrics. You put crap data in, results come out,
question.
Like, it's got to be good data. As an economist, that's the entire shooting match. And one of the things that freaks me out the most is Project 2025. It's like, let's get rid of Head Start.
Right.
What are you even talking
about? It's
just stupid.
It doesn't accomplish what they purport it to accomplish.
Correct.
It doesn't save us any money.
Like, it will cost us more.
Even if they decided that saving money is okay on the backs of kids. Which I don't buy that anyway.
Right, premise.
but let's just, for the argument's sake, accept the premise that we need to rein in spending. That means we need to figure out how to be wise when it comes to the use of our dollars.
Wise,
smart, effective, long-term impact is tremendous. I was originally a social worker many, many years ago, like forever ago, working with the most at-risk kids. These were the kids who were the lucky ones.
Yeah.
They got caught up in the system and got the help they needed. And we were able to relaunch that trajectory. But I often thought to myself, what would have happened if we had just started with those kids a few years earlier? Life would have been better for them. The cost to society. You're an economist.
Yes,
this
sir.
Is internalizing the externalities.
Talk about externalities.
That's what we
got to
do
all the time. Will you come back and talk with
Happy
me again
to.
Sometime, Congressman?
Anytime. Apparently, I'll even come to Milwaukee.
Oh, fabulous. We'll do a great fish fry with you.
That'd be great.
Michigan Congressman, the 8th CD, Dan Kildee. It really was an absolute pleasure,
you.
Sir. Have a wonderful DNC.
I'll do it.
Don't go anywhere, folks. We got more special guests coming up next. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network's special live coverage of the 2020 for DNC here from the United Center in Chicago. We'll be right back.